Welcome to the Deconstruction Podcast. This is the podcast where we seek to deconstruct the narratives that define our lives in order to find the common humanity in all of us. We explore the intersection of psychology, spirituality, and society as a way to try to navigate the current geopolitical climate in a healthy and informed way. Here we also hope to explore the mechanisms of change within ourselves in order to experience life a little more fully. I'm your host, Rachel Spiker. As we begin, I want to invite you to take a moment to pause and tune into your environment. I currently am living on the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Sioux and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and I want to slow down in order to honor the people who tended to and cared for this land for thousands of years, and invite you to be more aware of where you are as well. And now, I want to invite you to pull that awareness into yourself, noticing how it is that you are feeling at this moment. I can notice I feel a sense of delight in my chest and warm gratitude to be holding your awareness. However you are arriving, I hope that my voice can be with you throughout the course of this episode. Thank you so much for going on this journey with me. In this episode, we get together to discuss the why beneath the retreats we run. We talk about how we birth the idea of attuned and our hopes and intentions and integrity that we run all of our retreats from. We talk about the ways we created a foundation built on safety, connection, and belonging, and from that container brought people together to bring down these masks and defenses that typically keep us disconnected from feeling deep relational attunement. And through intentional practices, spaces, we spend the weekend coming together in a way that allows us to be seen and attuned to deeper than most of us encounter in a daily way. I hope you enjoy this episode. Alice, I am so delighted to be here with you as we're about to record this episode on this topic that is really alive inside of us right now. And so for my listeners, Alice and I run retreats together, and we just finished one this past week, and we thought it would be really fun to capture some of that energy, that eros, that vitality alive in us that feels really here and potent, and just translate that into an episode. Thank you for being here, Alice. I appreciate the gift of your time and the gift of you sharing with my listeners what it is you're learning right now. I can already feel this burgeoning, bubbling energy inside of excitement and anticipation, because I get this profound privilege of walking alongside you doing life and seeing the gold that you are unearthing as you are emerging into our meadow of secure attachment. And I cannot wait to share some of what has been bubbling inside of us with my listeners. So thank you for being here.
I feel so glad to be here, Rachel. I'm smiling. I can feel my heart beating a little bit with anticipation and nervousness because this matters so much. And also some of what we witness at the retreat, some of what I feel shifting in my body is hard to put into words. So the heartbeat of, oh, it's so funny to try to put, it's so funny, it's playful, it's hard, it's scary to try to put our experiences into words. And let's play with that together. Let's practice that together. So I'm here. I feel so good, Rachel. And what an honor, really, to get, what an honor for, I feel so grateful for us that we're spending a little bit of time and space pulling up what feels so sacred about what we've been learning together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for naming the nerves that way. I can feel that as well. And I was sort of contemplating, why am I feeling this nerves? I know how to talk about these topics. And I think it's actually, as I begin to drop into myself deeper in an embodied way, the ability to translate it cognitively takes more time than I think I'm used to. And so I'm feeling like, am I going to be able to capture the essence of what we created in a way that's going to both honor it and be coherent? So we get to play together. We'll see what we create.
We get to play together. Mm-hmm. We get to play together. It is so funny as we're practicing with our relationship with time and deconstructing everything we've been taught about time and how time moves and how we adhere to schedules and to timetables, to think about, we're trying to record a podcast in a certain amount of time and how funny that is. I just think it's so funny to be practicing doing the work of the soul. And we know the work of the soul is slow and down, and to be doing that work in the context of the urgency of our society, and how that oftentimes then is painful or hard or sticky, but we just get to laugh about it today.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you and I have been saying this, but this funny lesson from the universe that I thought the more I heal, the more I evolve, that I'll actually have a widened capacity to do more things with my time. And I'm actually finding that I need more time to be able to produce what I want to produce. And so I love the joke of us trying to capture everything we're learning in this moment into one episode of a podcast. And I've really been sitting with the words that you said to me, that time expands as we slow down. Mm-hmm. And so also thinking about this container you and I are creating in the confines of an episode, and also where we can go in the depths of it when we are just slowing down, tuning into ourselves and sharing from that place.
Yeah, that's right. Right? Like, time expands, and the more we let time expand and drop into that space, I'm almost thinking of it like a doorway opening and us like a trap door, and that's time expanding. And then we go down and down and down into the belly of the earth through that trap door, and the jewels that are there as we let time expand, slow down and slip past this idea of days and hours and minutes and seconds, but can slip into that crack and start exploring what's underneath there. Oh my goodness, the riches that are for us, that are waiting for us, are so extraordinary, are so precious. So I'm thinking about this time together right now as us holding hands, opening that trap door and slipping in together.
Let's go in.
Yeah.
So the past few weeks have been quite monumental for both of us. Just healing our attachment styles, no big deal, as we drop into birthing this imagination baby that's been incubating for 3 years. I think how we want to start is by going into attuned first and letting that become the trailhead that leads us down the path that we're going to journey down together in this episode. Does that still feel good?
Feels so good.
Let's talk about our baby.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about attuned, the retreats that Rachel and I are running. And when I think about the word attuned, just to use that as maybe the first jewel that we're reaching as we move into the belly of the earth. When I think about the word attuned, I think about presence and attention and slowing down to begin to notice what is there in my body, what is there in this moment in time, what physical sensations, what large and more acute physical sensations are there, and then what more subtle physical sensations, what's the numbness or even the emptiness that's in my body, what's the emotional experience, what's the emotional landscape of myself and my body right now? What are the bigger emotions? What are the more subtle emotions? And then what are the thoughts? So what is happening right now? And there's another quality of attunement that's the quality of compassion. So it's dropping in to my body, into my felt experience, into this moment in time with an awareness and opening, but also a deep compassion. And I'm finding myself getting emotional as I even say this right now, just to think about welcoming whatever is there and welcoming it with this ethos of radical hospitality. You can be here. You are welcome in this place. And how counter to what we've been taught that radical hospitality is. I mean, just to drop into the physical sensations, thinking about pain that might be here and how we've been taught to fear pain, or that pain will compromise or diminish us in this ableist society that we live in, and to say, oh, neck pain, oh, knots in my stomach, that sensation, that the aching that's there, oh, you can be here. And then moving into the emotional landscape, oh, anxiety, oh, you can be here. Welcome. The nervousness of this podcast, I care about you. So it's the noticing and the attention. And I almost been thinking about attention as a light, as a beam of sunlight that I can start shining into myself and noticing what's there. And then noticing what's there with such compassion, with such love. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about how we can address our bodies, saying, darling, I care about your suffering. And I love that phrase in the context of attunement or attuning to self. I care about your suffering. I care about you. Welcome. And what happens is we drop down and down into ourselves, the presence that is there, the vessel that we're able to create to welcome everything. And then we can begin from that place to turn that same attention to the people who are around us. So to say, oh, here you and I are, Rachel, and I can see you, and I can notice, and if I'm really present, I can notice the more subtle aspects of you. I can notice some nervousness showing up. I can see a smile at the edge of your mouth. I can notice, but also I can start noticing the energetic experience. And there's this promise there too, that as I attune to self and attune to you, I can attune and touch into the places of numbness, of disassociation, the emotional experiences that might have been too overwhelming for you, and that we can hold them together because I care. I care about the suffering of every part of you. So as Rachel and I have been exploring this concept in ourself, which is its own trailhead, what a better vessel, what better vessel for the retreat spaces than to start with this attunement of self, attunement of others. And of course, it's not a stagnant process, but when I attune to myself and attune to Rachel, then she's able to attune to me. And there's this deepening. And just as we are journeying deeper and deeper into the earth, into the belly of Mother Earth, this attunement is allowing us to journey deeper and deeper into ourselves. We're first attuning to those emotions, those physical experiences that are more acute. And then, together, as we create a little bit more time and a little bit more space, we journey a little bit further down and further down. It's so beautiful. And I think what was so sturdy about the vessel of attuned, our retreat vessel of attuned, is that we had been practicing attuning to self and each other for a long time. And so our bodies knew about what medicine this can bring. Yeah. And what presence and what attention and what awareness. And we dreamt up, what would it look like if we start as that, as the seed, that as the central relational experience and then created a retreat, created a collective vessel of healing that built upon that fractal after fractal after fractal.
When I think about the path of our journey together and knowing how radically transformative it was to have you hold me in spaces I didn't know how to have compassion for. And by experiencing and feeling and witnessing your compassion for me, I was actually able to access that within myself. And I think you summarized that so beautifully, that the container of our friendship and the recognition of the potency that relational healing can offer had a searching for where we can encounter this more in ourselves, in the world, and we couldn't find it in the way that we wanted. And so we're like, we need to create this. Mm-hmm. This needs to be available. This kind of healing is what offers transformation and is also what is absent in society for a larger part right now. I think there are little pockets that are trying to create this and that are doing that. But it feels really important for me to name that the foundation that we did these retreats from were because we encountered something that was healing and we wanted to continue encountering that, and we couldn't find a place that was cultivated. And so we decided to create the container where we're going to be able to cultivate these spaces where women right now, but humans, come together, gather and say, oh, this is who I am. Does it belong? Is it enough? And to actually encounter a mirror and an experience of acceptance and being held and witnessed in those moments. And then getting for us to experience the actual transformation that happens in those moments as the gathering happens has been truly one of the most beautiful things that I've witnessed.
Yeah, it is so important to create those spaces. That the relational vessel is such an important container, because of course so much of that wounding happened within relational containers, happened within family systems, happened within family systems that were held within community systems, that were held within societal systems. And so we can only, in the context of individualized therapy or in other more individualized approaches, we can bring ourselves forward, but we're not seeing that modeled around us. We're not seeing those family systems shaken up. And so to bring a group of people together and say, wait, in every other group that you have been in and every other family system you've been in, you have had to put on masks because you haven't felt like you've belonged. You've been told that you're too much. You've been told you don't matter. You've been told you don't belong. You've been told that your love is conditional. This is a place where you can practice belonging, practice experiencing belonging, bringing belonging from your head to your heart to your whole body. And it teaches us a different way. It teaches us that our bodies belong. And it feels so important to have that experiential encounter. Yeah. Because without it, in reading books, in other larger groups where you don't have the chance to take off your mask and see the impact of that, see, not only are you not rejected, but actually you are loved more, because your full self is so lovable, is so easy to love, is so worthy of unconditional love. And so that's what we hope to create and what we have been creating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like, and my body has changed for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think talking about the way that the container of our retreat was able to have people encounter within themselves and in a setting of other humans, acceptance and compassion and belonging, saying like, oh, we love you and it's easy. And then I think a really cool part of, especially the last retreat, that felt exciting to encounter was the way that people realize they impact other people and letting mm-hmm. that sink in. And so as they're showing up so bravely saying like, oh, this is really scary. Like I'm too much, or I can't be held. And for them to be received by us holding them and saying, you're not too much, and loving on them unconditionally, us, like, that's where I was like, this is the magic we're going to create. But then someone to say like, oh, actually watching that happen made me feel like I could show up more. Watching them encounter you holding them made me feel less of a vulnerability hangover, less of a burden to be held. And it became like the multifaceted ways we were able to impact each other through witnessing all of the unfolding and vulnerability that happened just felt like it kept going deeper, and it kept having these surprising tendrils show up that actually changes something inside of us. I'm remembering this one moment in our circle, and I'm going to be careful with my words to not break any sort of level of confidentiality. But one person, so after our first night, it was really powerful. Everyone showed up so bravely. Like, it truly moved me to see the courage that the women showed up sharing, being held, voicing some of their fears that have been caused from relationships. And then the next morning, there was this sort of like tentative buzz around, oh, did we share too much? And having this sort of like vulnerability hangover effect of like, oh my gosh, how did I show up yesterday? And so as we were having our morning circle, and one of the women was sharing and just being so courageous, and we got to hold them, another individual was able to say like, oh, I had removed myself from the circle because I was feeling like I was just way too much in how vulnerably I showed up. But witnessing you show up this morning has actually brought me back into the circle. And now I can feel the safety of being here again, even though showing up without my mask felt so intense at first. And that kind of like, so then that person got to feel how their courage and vulnerability actually brought more courage and vulnerability into somebody else. That person who felt they were discounted for their vulnerability actually was brought back in. And there's just this entire energy of transformation that gets played out as we gather together when it's done safely.
Yeah. I just think about the way that our family systems have this impact of not making us feel safe. Our family systems or communities, any system we're in that is unable to hold all of our humanness, because we are all trying to survive these overlapping systems of oppression that are only allowed to are only able to exist because we're dismembered. So I think about in these family systems, how we are asked to dismember ourselves and it's not safe to show up as our full self. And then we all watch the way each other aren't safe to show up as ourselves. And so we learn from that and say, oh yes, I am too much, or I shouldn't, I didn't know I was too much, but now I'm seeing from that I must be too much. And there is this amplification effect. But everyone is becoming more and more dismembered. The masks are coming up. And so to think about how to take those same patterns and to flip them on their head, so that instead the more you show up means the more I show up, means the more you can show up. And it's like this sacred reclaiming of our outcast parts, of every part of us that we pushed to the side because we felt it would threaten our belonging. But as I'm bringing my parts back, it turns out that it allows you to bring your parts back. And there's this space that becomes safe for all of us to be welcome. And not just all of us to be welcome, but all of us to be the most precious gift that we could give each other in our community. And that to me it's so extraordinary. It is so profound to think about the part of myself that I shoved the furthest down may in fact be the jewel of greatest price. And not just for me, it is not just my own jewel, but it's the jewel for you, the jewel for our community, the jewel for any place that I go. Oh, but that work is so scary, which is why
we need each other, and we need to create safe containers for this work to get to happen.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about our ceremony the day before, where we, as we were sinking into ourselves and our own way of healing and using our relationship to move towards those more tender parts that needed caretaking, how a family was birthed from it. Like when our family of origin or the early environments that shape us create these woundings of dismembering to recreate a family where we remember ourselves and each other, and how revolutionary that is. And I think that's kind of talking into what you were saying about, like, it's the opposite of what we encountered that caused the wounding. It's like, actually, I'm going to celebrate these parts of you that had to be contorted and pushed away, and instead bringing them back in and holsting them up. Who could we become from that? If our typical way of engaging in community is having to dismember and having to contort and make ourselves small and refined in these conditions, these templates, to break those off and instead say the unique energy and eros of you, Alice, is so important to bring to this earth. I want to celebrate every aspect of it and encourage the growth of all facets, like a wild tree growing. And it just feels so enlivening in myself as I think about what will we create? What will we become as humans when we come together with this sort of intention?
Yeah, that is right. I mean, I'm buzzing, Rachel, as you're saying that, because it came from this place of saying, so oftentimes our families of origin, or so oftentimes our family structures, these communities that we were born into, so oftentimes through the belief systems, through the stories that travel down through families, through the pain that travels down through families and the trauma.
Yeah.
So often the belief systems that we come to have, spoken or unspoken, are the belief systems that tell us that we're loved conditionally, that our loving is not full and whole, but we have to act in a certain way, to follow a set of rules, or that we matter, but only sometimes, or that we belong, but only sometimes. Yeah. And not to be too much or not be not enough. And so it's like, oh, wait, can we take those same belief systems? Can we take the power of mythos and mythopoetics? Can we take the idea of family and how families hold each other and how families reinforce belief systems and uphold those together and gather together and engage in traditions together? Can we take all those, but say in this family, we love, and in this family we belong, and in this family we matter. And what's so important about that is that when you forget, I remind you, Rainbow, because I see you and I have you. And just like a wild tree, in this family we have each other by our roots, so that we can grow wild and free, but we have each other. And that's so important, because every system around us is asking us to be smaller, and is asking us to dismember, and is asking us to be less human. And so it is so hard to have ourselves in that world, which is why we have family structures, which is why when you're sick, I take care of you, because we take care of each other. We show up for each other. We show up when it's hard, but we also show up when it's good. And we tell each other what we see to call that forth. And we pray and we honor the sacred and we dance and we sing. And it is so beautiful. And I think it gets to one of the lessons I'm learning most, which is that, we can use the same pathways, the same systems that did so much harm, and we can re-inhabit those and use them instead for such sacred and holy work. We can use the system of family. We can use the system of prayer. We can use the system of gathering, whatever it is, of myths, of witnessing, and turn it into this work that is holy and that is rooted in love and in our complete humanness. So, wow, it is powerful.
It is. It's a reclaiming of, I think, how for most of human evolution we've been living, and it's just so recently in the industrial era that we've been dismembered from these parts of how humans have known how to do life together. We gather, we move, we sing, we tell stories, we learn in multi-generational communities. We are not the same, and we learn from each other's differences. That actually brings more vibrancy and depth and expression. But when we've been taught that our belonging is predicated on sameness, then of course we're going to make ourselves as small, as contorted and conditioned as is necessary. And so it just feels so invigorating to be starting this family with you and being able to firsthand experience it and then encounter it with you and then encounter it with these women and feel the big magic of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about before the retreat, the nervousness that was showing up last week and really being able to ground back in like, do I believe that humans are hardwired for healing? Mm. Do I believe that when we are in attuned relationship with ourselves and held in safe relational presence, that we actually know how to heal and move towards the things? Do I believe that as we are held in the energy that might be more painful, that as we stay with it and are guided or midwifed through it, it transmutes into something deeper and more beautiful? Yes. And so can I trust that the container we're creating is going to bring forth big magic, whatever that looks like, without having to place needing the participants to have any sort of experience or validate anything for my own ego? And when all those conditions are done and you and I just got to like land and be like, okay, let's see what unfolds here. And then witnessing what unfolded.
Yeah.
I can still like feel the good activation in my stomach right now, being like, oh, right. Like humans know how to do this. We know how to do this. We just need to be brought back in to that container of where we can access the deep knowing of our intra-relational oneness.
Yeah. Yes, and to create a space safe and sturdy enough so that we can do it. But I think about how every woman in that group knew how to hold each other and knew how to see each other. And I am awestruck by our capacity as humans to hold, even though we were never held, to see, even though we were never seen. I mean, it's just, I can feel emotions moving through my arms and across my shoulders and up my throat and into my face. How do we know how to do in ways we were never taught and never modeled? How do we know how to parent when we were never parented, to hold when we were never held? It is so profound to me. And so then how do we create spaces where we have each other so that it's more possible? And we take what's already innate with us and we make it safe and we celebrate it and we dance and we sing and we say, look at you, look at what you've been holding, look at holding and look at the way you hold. Wow. Oh.
I wonder if you would share what makes a safe container. We've said a few times that like the magic that can happen inside the vessel we are creating is predicated on safety. So I wonder if you'd go over what that looks like or some key characteristics of how to make sure what we're creating or what someone might be entering is safe.
I think one thing that comes to me immediately is that we all have our different stories and have felt sensations in our body of what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. And one of the most beautiful things we got to do at the retreat in every group container. We are setting group norms and making sure that there is an explicit list of what we need to do to keep a group safe. And what we did from that is take this idea of a family and create a family manifesto saying what would make this family that we're building for the weekend safe. And so we collected that and got it from everyone, which feels so important because I think a part of safety is to honor every single one and every single body's experience moving into that space, and what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. Another thing that comes to me that I'm learning is that I, especially as a facilitator of spaces, I need to have myself completely, that I need to feel safe in myself and also need to feel safe with you to know that I have me and you have me in order to create a safe space. And I think dropping down even further to try to get really specific, that means that I am welcoming whatever needs to come forward. So my grief, I got my anxiety. There's that welcome that we talked about at the beginning, that welcome and that holding for anything that comes. I think of this home in my belly, in my womb, and what home feels like, and creating a home, a welcoming, safe home, so that all of my parts, all of the energy can come and be there, and I'll hold them. And that is so important and gets us into secure attachment a little bit. That is so important because if I bring my anxious attachment forward, some of the ways my anxious attachment shows up is that I get activated if people are running late and I feel like that's an indication of my mattering. I get activated if someone's not listening to me. And for so long I could cognitively see that, and yet my body would be telling me, this is because you really don't matter and the truth is coming out. And so I just think about how in other spaces where I've shown up as a facilitator, when I haven't had myself and when I haven't felt safe in myself and I haven't belonged to myself and I haven't mattered to myself, then if someone isn't listening to me, there's a lot of activation there, and my anxious parts flare up and my fear flares up and my belonging flares up. And so then that's actually not safe for that other person because they are being taught that they can't be their full selves. They're only safe here if they show up in a certain way. But if I have my full self and you have me and you have you and I have you, then every single person can show up with every single one of their parts in safety. And safety means that we will have them and we will not exile them and we will not shame them in danger and we will not ask them to be anything less than themselves. We will treat them with respect and with compassion and with radical hospitality, that welcome. So I think to answer your question in a really succinct way, it's that last bit I said. Safety means every single person with every one of their parts, with whatever they're showing up with, is treated with such tenderness, with respect, with compassion, with love, and with sturdiness. But that can't happen unless we, as the ones leading it, have ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the most important thing. In therapy, we say therapists know thyself, because what unchecked transferences or shadows, ideas, stories get brought into the room will be put on the people around us. And so I cannot support that enough to I guess, like, I'm thinking about me really needing to work through the participants having a good time at the retreat and not needing them to have any sort of enjoyment or needing them to think we did good or needing them to make the retreat a certain sort of way and unburdening that from them. So it's like, I have me, so I don't actually need anything from them. And then from that container, they just get to show up and be held, like you said. Yeah. And for me to fully have me as a group facilitator, you and I need to have that relationship. And on that sturdy, secure foundation, we actually can hold what shows up.
Yeah.
And so there's so many different ways, like yours with timing being listened into, mine with my worth being attached to whether or not they think I'm a great facilitator or they had a great time. And when we can start to notice our own unconscious stories and then reclaim them back to ourselves, it's like, oh, actually, I really, really believe what we're creating is harnessing mechanisms of change that allow evolution to happen in humans. And I believe in the integrity of what we want to do in the world. So I don't need to place anything on somebody else to validate that. I have that in myself that is secure. And that's just so freeing, but also creates a container for much deeper work to happen because it's safe, because we're safe for people to get to show up.
That's such an important question. It's like the second question that I'm finding myself wanting to move towards is what happens when there's safety. And I actually just want to like feel that right now. It's like, what happens? What gets to happen when there's safety? And that is, I think about the rich imagination of alchemy, and if we're creating a container, that alchemical vessel within which all that magic can start taking place, then that sturdiness is what makes that vessel able to hold everything that goes on within it. And so if that vessel is sturdy and safe enough, what can happen? What can happen on the inside of that?
Yeah. As you were talking, I was like feeling into that question as well. What happens when things are safe? And I just had this image of mothers, like good mothers with like kids, being kids and getting to have like the full range of expression for whatever is happening in their little experience that's so perceptive. And the mothers in this image not reacting in some sort of defensive, unconscious, impulsive way, but instead holding all of the kids' experience with just attuned, kind compassion. Like that midwife's the little child's experience. It's like it's through safety that we actually get to have these corrective encounters or prediction errors. It's like, oh, if I show up like this, I'm going to be too much. When you think you're going to be too much and then you're held in a group where that's mirrored back, that's deepening that pattern. But if you think you showing up in a group vulnerably is too much and we actually are like, this is so easy to love you, let me hold you, get bigger, cry more. Like that's an actual prediction error that goes against the story we have that shapes our narrative around ourselves. And so it's like, it's in the container of safety where those corrective encounters happen that we get to re-actualize ourselves, re-understand who we are and remember a truer identity and show up more fully. So healing.
It is so healing. And as you're saying that, if we can keep dropping into the belly of Mother Earth, I'm thinking about us as mothers and so many of our parts as those unruly children, and some of them less unruly and more isolated because we've asked them to go so far away. We've banished them into the psychic wastelands because we feared that they would rupture connection. And so what happens in a vessel when we can become our own mothers and start to welcome those parts back and just like you say, play with play with what happens when we do experience those prediction errors, play with what happens when our arrows comes back, when our voice comes back, when our creativity comes back, when our tears come back, and how they're held, and it's, and how we're holding them, but also how we are being held as we hold them. And it's really beautiful to me, because I think of so much of the banishment of those parts is self-inflicted. It's us doing that because we want so much for belonging. And I've been playing with this question too. Once we start welcoming those back, are we ready to live with the consequences of having those back? Ready to live more fully? Are we ready to come back into the world with our arrows, with our creativity, with our boundaries, with our anger, with our rage?
Yeah.
And to get to be in a space where we can start practicing that and say, oh, let me tell you what I see when you bring your singing voice back to me. Let me tell you what I see. Years. And so we get to start practicing that too, allowing ourselves to be seen and practicing with what it's like to really come forward into community, into relational containers with that. And then also the grief and the longing that is tinged in that too, of, we are creating such a beautiful space and such a soft space, safe space, and the world is so hard. And there's all this broken, I mean, I just think about the retreat space as this womb space and the world outside being so full of glass. And so what is it like then to be playing with this and then moving back out into the world? And I think there's just some grief for me in that, of how tender these spaces are and how we still must protect ourselves so well. Thank goodness, right? We have those masks. And yet, oh, how I long for spaces outside of a retreat weekend for that. So we practice.
So we practice. So we cultivate friendships that are tied so deeply to doing life together. You remind me when I forget. I hold your grief because it's not too much. And we keep showing up bravely.
Yeah.
As you were talking, I was thinking about Audre Lorde's essay on the uses of the erotic. She talks about how, can we actually be with each other in these moments? Like, can we be with the exile showing up and not look away? Like, the not looking away feels so potent. And when we can, it actually reminds us that, like, oh, this is what we want. When we encounter that power that is birthed in deep relational intimacy and connection, it awakens something of a natural state. It's like, oh, I'm actually meant to be in this eros. I'm not meant to be numbed. I'm not meant to be depressed. I'm not meant to be lethargic. It does not mean that we encounter happiness and joy every step of the way, but there is an aliveness that makes the pain tolerable. It's like, oh, when you are with me in my sadness, in my core grief, there's actually an encounter there that happens that not only makes it manageable and transmutes it into something different, but it also reawakens a sense of like, oh, this is alive. This is alive. And I think so much of pop culture, pop psychology is about how do I get to a state of happiness? How do I become joyful all the time? Which is selling us a lie. It's more like, how do I tolerate the human experience more fully and deeply in the rich color of all of it? We do it together.
Yeah, we do it together. And that, oh, the grief, oh, the anger, all of those are doors that we must walk through, because they allow us to experience the ease and the joy and the beauty in a richer way too. But how scary for the anger or towards the grief if we weren't held in that. So we hold each other in it.
So we hold each other. Yeah.
So we hold. That's a little bit about attuned. I think just to deepen into that thought, Rachel, I just think about coming out of the retreat, coming out of this time with you where you were able to guide me towards that home that now that has lived within me, has always been within me, been able to find. And that home of secure attachment, that home of belonging, that home of mattering, and that home that I couldn't find because I was cast out of it through relationship. And mm-hmm. so I couldn't make my way back there on my own, that home that you helped me find. And so I think about finding that home inside my body. I think about the exceptional, glorious, tender experiences that we had in the retreat and how moved I am from that. And also what it's been like now a week out, mm-hmm. the tears I've wept and the tender terrain that I've been walking on the other side of all of this, and just reminding myself, oh, this is exactly right too. And the hurt is right, and the grief is right, and the indignation and the anger is right. But it's wow to like keep reminding myself of that, especially, you know, coming off of this experience that was such a high in so many ways, and now dropping into this, oh, just the human experience with every part of it. And reminding myself that this is it, that there isn't anything different than what is right now. And so how can I continue to hold it and deepen into it? And when I do find emotions coming up, let them come up and hold them as they come up. Oh, but that takes so much time, and it takes so much love, and it takes a moving internally and externally that is so different than what we've been taught, and so different than what's expected of us, and so different than how the world values worth. And and so that a wild part of this that I'm moving through in real time of, oh, how do I honor that the way of the soul is slowing down when it feels like everything around me is telling me that can't be the way.
How are you doing it?
How am I doing it? I'm breathing slowly. I am having the felt experience of canceling things and later flights and like turning over these timetables that I was adhering to. Like, there's something about the disruptive nature of that, of like the flipping over tables that feels so important and experiential. And playful in a certain way, and also in like in physical, as I can kind of sink down and imagine that, and that feels so good. I flip over this table, and suddenly, oh, there's this trap door that leads me into the belly of the earth, and then I just get to be there. But then just breathing deeply, letting that be a doorway. Even at the beginning of this podcast, I came in with anxiousness, with grief. And you said, this can be here, Alice. This can be here. Your grief matters to me. And it took me so long to settle. I mean, it took 45 minutes before Rachel and I could start recording this podcast. 45 minutes before we could press record. And thank goodness you have that time, and I have that time. Mm-hmm. But what if I didn't know you? And it's like, what if Well, now that I'm getting to a place, had I not known you, I would have said, I need some time. But wow, like what? That's all to say, like you honoring that for me, and that's what happens when we're developing our ethos as a family and we get to remind each other of that and hold each other and say, it's going to take exactly the time it's going to take. And we're going to honor that. So practicing that way, and then the subversion, which is its own type of energy that I'm playful energy that I'm feeling too.
I'm feeling so glad that you're sharing this, because I think there's two things happening for me. One is undoing the hierarchy of leaders being enlightened and over the human experience, and knowing firsthand that navigating the highs and lows after a medicine's journey, after a retreat, after ceremony has been such a deep part of the work that I don't hear talked about very often. And I think when we can prepare people that it's like, healing is not binary. It's not that you have this thing that you want to heal and then you have this encounter and now it's good forever. And even if cognitively we understand that, I think subconsciously, like we are longing for that. I heard a psychologist named Dr. Ido Cohen talk about how our inability to actually stay with experiences is a product of this capitalistic oppression that we live in. It's like, next, fix me, go. And it's also a byproduct of suffering. Like, of course, we want it to end. But yeah. The journey is, how do I actually tolerate what's happening? How do I stay with it? How do I cultivate a relationship with the lowness that happens after the high? And that's such a radical shift from like, I have the high, I'm healed, into like, no, actually we need to cultivate that radical hospitality, that relational attunement to the low, to the grief, to the sadness when it inevitably shows up in this human experience. And it feels really good to hear you, the retreat leader, saying, this past week I've been cracked open and the rawness is all here and I'm actually learning how to be with it in a deeper way than I have before. And a year from now, it'll be deeper, but this is where I'm at in this moment. And to hear your journey of what is being required of you in this moment is shattering the timeline stories that have been entangled with your worth. And I think there's something so important about that, where on the other end of moving through these old stories that your worth was tied up on is actually the answers to how you hold and protect the fragility of this piece that you are now cultivating. And I think that gets to be sort of like a signpost people can look out for, like, oh, what are old stories about where my worth is tied to? Because that's probably going to be the doorway that is going to move me deeper into whatever evolution I'm in this season. So thank you for sharing that. It feels so important in so many ways.
Well, I love you reflecting me. So thank you. It feels sacred. And I just want to echo what you just said, because it's so important. It mimics a beautiful quote from Clarissa Pinkola Estes, that I will paraphrase because I don't have right in front of me. If you are searching for your wild self, there are a few doorways, and one of them is a scar. The scars that we have on our bodies, the scars of our worth, the scars we have of belonging, those are the doorways. That's how we get back into ourselves. If we have an old story, that's how we get back into ourselves. So I'm just finding myself so moved by that, Rachel. Like, oh yeah, those scars that are all over my body, those are the ways that I get back in. And so then I can start, I've been spending so much of my life living from my head, and I can start tracing my fingers down from my head, resting on my heart. And I've been starting to learn to live from my heart. But then I keep going down and down and down and trace down to my belly, to my womb. And I'm learning what it's like to start living from my womb, to start living from that deepest, slowest, darkest part from within me and what happens if I start living there, but also the time it takes for me to travel all the way down so that I can bring something back up.
I haven't heard you word it like that before, and that just like struck me in my chest, like the time it takes me to go down so I can bring something up. That's that captures so much of what we've been learning. The way of the soul is slowing down.
It's slowing down.
Yeah. And the traveling into the womb with intention, it makes me think of the necessity of the winter season that is actually not dead and stagnant. Winter isn't stagnant. What it is gathering energy back into itself so that when spring comes, can bloom. And so you slowing and dropping down into your womb is reclaiming all your power back to you. I love that. Can we read our family manifesto?
Yeah.
I mean, we could do a whole episode on that because every single part of our manifesto has an experiential learning attached to it. Like, this was birthed from our work together, not, oh, this is things we want to aspire to. And so I think like the nature of the development of this is so important to name, but also like just there's so much richness in it we could go into. Yeah. We can just read it today though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking too, just as a preface, how so oftentimes, especially for those of us who grew up in an evangelical Christian tradition, how the concepts of manifestos or Bibles or rule books are meant to make us smaller instead of bigger, meant to dismember the parts of ourselves that don't fit in or that threaten the belonging. And so it's an interesting word to use, manifesto. And I just hope to bring that up at the beginning and then allow that word in and of itself to be expansive and reimaginatory and big. And also to say, in so many ideas of when I've heard about chosen family in the past or about creating a new family, it is so oftentimes defined by a rejection of our families of origin. And what was so powerful about dreaming up a new family together is that everyone is welcome. If you want to be in this family, we want you in this family and you belong. If you're hearing this as I read it and find like a longing in your chest of, oh, I want to be in this family. That family sounds really beautiful. You belong. Yeah. You're already a part of it. We want you. And we cannot wait to love you like family.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning the part about the connotation with the term manifesto. I think that's really important to name. Especially in the context of you talking about reclaiming family as healing, reclaiming story as healing, how can we work within these structures that have typically oppressed us and instead reclaim them for power? So this is not a list of rules that you need to obey to belong. It's actually a living document birthed from experience saying, how can we remind each other who we are and live in the anchoring of that? And so holding the tension of what gets activated as we say we're going to read our family manifesto, and also wanting to clarify the alive energy and guiding of it, not constricting.
Yeah. Our family. And this includes you. In this family, we belong. In this family, we matter. In this family, we are all good. In this family, we believe each other. In this family, we share stories. In this family, we share our secrets and we let ourselves be seen. In this family, we love unconditionally. In this family, we hold each other. In this family, we know that everything we need to know is already inside us. In this family, we take care of one another, and we've always got each other. In this family, our grief matters, and we cry together. In this family, we are not afraid of the predator complex. In this family, every part of us is welcome, and everyone is welcome. In this family, we are not too much. In this family, animals have souls. In this family, we tend to the land with respect. In this family, we laugh together and we delight in each other. In this family, we remember and we remind each other when we forget. In this family, we are wild and we dare. In this family, our moms belong. In this family, we attune to one another and we attune to ourselves. In this family, our bodies are sacred. In this family, we honor Eros and we prioritize our pleasure. In this family, we tend to our creativity. In this family, we sing and we dance together. In this family, we cultivate curiosity and we are flummoxed by beauty. In this family, we birth new worlds and we honor the life-death life cycle. In this family, we are all equal. We gather in a circle. In this family, we do ceremony together and we honor the sacred. In this family, we are calling back our energy and we are reawakening to our power. In this family, we are powerful. In this family, our belonging is not predicated on sameness. Our family is a revolution.
Felt very good to hear again.
Yeah.
This is like a good place to end. Is there any last thoughts or statements that you want to say as we close up here?
I think so much of the harm that has been done in the world is because we've had to other each other. And we haven't had spaces to transmute our grief into beauty and gratitude. And instead, our grief has been transmuted into violence. Mm. And so I just feel like, as I read that, it's like our family is a revolution because it is revolutionary to treat each other as family. And you are part of our family. And Rachel and I care of you and we will love you unconditionally. And to think about the way in which this can grow and change and where we all get to be ourselves instead of asking each other to be smaller or to be less than, to belong, to cry together so that we don't move that into violence and wars. It's so big to me. It feels so holy. I feel so... so honored to be sharing it in this space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you're talking, my face went all like energy bubbles up, felt like effervescent and right. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for gifting my listeners with your time and your wisdom and your words.
Mm.
The last part you were talking about, like, ignited all of these new topics about how we're healing our attachment styles together and the ways that that is showing up in our life. And so I would love for you to come on again and us to actually talk about that in some great depth. Little teaser for my listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alice, so much. I love you. You matter so deeply. I'm so grateful to be doing this work with you where we get to just go and hold people well.
Yeah, it's our work.
It's our work.
I love you, Rachel.
As we come to the end of this episode, I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude to you, our wonderful listeners. It feels like a profound privilege to take up space in your awareness. Your support means the world to us, and it's because of your curiosity and openness that this podcast is possible. A big thank you to our guest for sharing their wisdom and insights with us all today. If their words resonated with you, I encourage you to look them up on social media or find their website. I also want to extend my gratitude to Jonathan Kiddo for his unwavering support and dedication to producing this podcast. And to all of you tuning in, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving a rating or review. It truly helps in this podcast world. Remember, the journey of deconstruction doesn't end here. Stay curious, stay connected, and join us next time for another episode of Deconstruction.